Just quickly before I start, because we've got about another half a minute. Who's doing work with Xamarin at the moment? And who's going to? Who wants to do Xamarin stuff? Everyone. Cool. All right. All right, we may as well get started then. Still got a few people coming in, but... So my name's Jordan, and today I'm going to share with you some of the discoveries I've made over the last couple of years while building software, with a particular focus on apps. So I've got a couple of companies. One of them is Xamarin, which is a software design and development company. And we've built apps for Xbox One, Xbox 360, Windows Phone, and a few other platforms. And some of the apps we've built more recently have been SBS On Demand on Xbox, as well as 10Play on Windows Phone, some other stuff like that. But interestingly, I've actually also got a startup company called Project Tripod. And if you're at TechEd last year, you might have seen that demonstrated as part of the keynote. And it's available on Windows Phone at the moment, and we're building it as we speak for iOS and Android as well, using Xamarin. And it's some of the lessons that we've gained from that process that I want to share with you today. on Windows Phone, it's only been out for a few months, and we've already got over 50,000 downloads of that app. So, that's the story I'd like to tell today. So whether you're building apps for startup companies or tier one brands, the lessons that I'm going to share with you will apply. And so this is a level 400 talk. And for those of you who don't know what that means, it basically means that everyone in the room already knows everything that I'm going to tell them, and that you guys are just really here to tell me when I do it wrong. So level 400 talk. So before I get into it too much, I've done talks similar to this one before at a few tech heads over the years. So the ideas that I'm going to talk to you about today I actually developed quite some time ago on the Silverlight 2 platform. And then it's been translated to JavaScript, Windows 8, some Xbox in there as well. And now finally, we're working on with the same framework on Xamarin Forms. And at each jump, I've been lucky enough to be able to do a TechEd talk on that particular build. And so you can actually go along and view the old TechEd talks as part of the series to see us develop over the years. And so I originally started the framework at a time when there wasn't a lot of, I guess, MVVM frameworks, and certainly nothing special around view selection and navigation. And that's something that I find really important in any framework, and something that we're going to talk about today. And certainly there's popular frameworks around. We've got things like Caliburn, Micro, MVVM Lite, and of course Xamarin Cross. And each of them has their pros and cons, and any of them can be recommended depending on the situation. But see, our framework, Xamarin Core, which is actually available on GitHub, is completely unpopular, which is actually its strength, because it means that we can tear it down and rebuild it from scratch whenever we feel like it. So hopefully we don't get too many downloads today, so that trend can continue. But as I mentioned, all the code that I'm going through today is already on GitHub. There's both the Xamarin Core library, and there's another GitHub that I'll share with you guys later for the actual demo code that I'm running through today. And so today, as I said, I can show you this running on Xamarin Forms. It's been built from the ground up pretty much to work with Xamarin Forms. And just a little warning that it does only support iOS at the moment, with Android and Windows Phone coming soon. So as a senior developer or a software architect or a gun dev or someone who's responsible for teams or responsible for framework choices, it's your duty to set up your projects for your end users. And by end users, I mean other software developers that are going to be using that particular framework. You're responsible for choosing the patterns and practices that they're going to have to live with, they're going to have to code daily with. So you've got to keep them in the game, you've got to reduce their work and complexity, and of course improve quality. They're all goals that you have when you're setting these things up. And if you are setting something like this up, then it is your responsibility to handle that. It's squarely your job, and you facilitate these people. And those developers are your end user. And so often devs come in, consultants or whatever, and they set projects up the correct way without any regard for the actual developers that have to go and use that particular framework choice. And I see this a lot out in the wild, actually. They you see developers that come in and they give you the best breakneck, latest, you know, NuGet everything packages and load up this project with all these awesome ways to do things, and then they just dump it into the development team and walk away. And there's just simply no elegance to that. It's not finishing the job. And so when I'm setting something up, I like to think as a framework as the sheepdog, it's the guardian angel, and it's also their roadblock to make sure they don't do stupid stuff. And it's got to be really stupidly simple, easy for devs to introduce new code into the project and follow the conventions and patterns that your frameworks have set up. It should be so hard to get it wrong that it's almost embarrassing. And so today I'm going to show you how I've solved some of those problems. And I'll be showing you how doing it using this demo framework that I've built today, which you can pull apart and use yourself, or you can go and use one of the other MVBM frameworks, whatever. It's the concepts that are important. And so I want you to consider all that I've just said next time that you're making framework choices or you're responsible for setting up a Greenfields project. And with a lot of you guys thinking about starting Xamarin projects, then it's the perfect time to really consider it. And so when doing that, I want you to consider the developer user experience. What experience are your developers on your team going to have? Okay, so this talk, as I said, it's meant to be level 400, but I'm going to show you something up for a start that's so simple it's not even funny. And I find that's the hardest bit when doing software dev. It's to make something simpler than what it really is. And so after the demo, I'll go through and we'll go through how some of those bits work that I'm going to demonstrate today. And of course, you can follow along on GitHub. And so we've got, there's another URL that I'll give you in a minute for the actual demo code. All right, so that's annoying, that was just working a minute ago. So what I'm actually going to do today is I'm going to demonstrate to you guys the code working with, there we go, it's my fault, user issue, pressing the wrong button. I'm actually going to show you guys the code running on, my computer just rebooted. So I'm going to show you the code running on the Xamarin Core framework, which I've just actually directly downloaded from my GitHub. So I might not do that. And basically, the demonstration, this is the current version of Xamarin Core that's on GitHub. Let's wait for this thing to boot up. It's a new MacBook, it shouldn't take too long. And just the idea is that I'm going to quickly just show you how it all works. The even better part is I've got to go into Parallels now, so. Let's try that. Cool. So can you imagine Visual Studio for a minute? It's this wonderful thing that can be in both light theme and dark theme. Okay. So, has anyone ever seen a MacBook just reboot like that? Because that's the first time I've ever seen it. Here we go. So here's how you set up Xamarin. You've got to run the Xamarin build host, and then Visual Studio will connect through to that. Hopefully. Okay. Cool. 5 minutes down. You guys are going to miss out on the last 5 minutes of my awesome talk. Okay, so we've got it running now. It's going to build up. and hopefully we get to see the code running. Awesome. All right. So Xamarin Core, download it straight off GitHub. And so now we can actually see it running here. And basically what it is I've got this super simple sample project that you can look through. And basically it shows you how to do a few basic concepts when you're building these apps. So we've got some tab panels, we've got some, you know, like one of those little slide out menus and things like that. We can change between pages, we can do pop-up modals and pop-down and all that sort of stuff, all doing this MVVM style. We've got loaders, so we can do tray loaders, we can do full screen loaders and all that sort of stuff. And so what I'll quickly do is I'll just quickly show you guys how to add a new view to that thing. And the idea here is that I want to show you how simple it is to do it, and then we'll go and figure out how I actually did that. And so we've got this sample area here. Apologies if that's a bit small. I've made the code nice and big, but what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to go and add a new area here and add a new page to that little side menu that you saw come out. And this is really, really basic how I do this. So first of all, I'm going to add a new Xamarin Forms page, and I'm going to call this Demo View. Now, I'm calling it Demo View because there is a convention at play here that we'll investigate further later. But essentially, to automatically pair views to view models, I call the view a view, and the view model is going to be the same name with the view model on the end. So I'm going to call this Demo View Model. So I've got this view model here, and I'm going to base it on XViewModel. Okay. And in the actual demo view here, it's got this binding that's been set up automatically as part of the template code. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to facilitate that main text, and then I'm going to actually go in there and set main text to something. Jordan was here. And pretty much to add it to the master detail view, which is that sliding out menu, I go into my master detail root and I just say, add it in there. So demo view, oops. Now it has to, you'll notice one thing here, I'm adding the view model, not the view. The whole system works by view model first navigation. The views are automatically discovered using convention at a later point. How it does that, we'll get into as well soon, because it's a hugely important concept, I guess, when you're building these applications. And so I'll just run that up. And what we'll see now is we'll see I've added, just with that little piece of code, oops, I've got to set the title. Just with that little piece of code, I've actually added in one of these demo view models. So title, demo item, now run it. Okay, and so that was actually pretty quick to do. Excuse the fact that my machine had to restart to do it, but ideally, I've just added a new menu item with a page into the system in a couple of seconds, and that's getting away from all the junk and having to know everything about view models and all that stuff and just getting down to code, building forms, getting stuff onto the screen. That's what the framework's all about. And so let's talk now. Let's go to the next slide. Okay, so that certainly wasn't a level 400 demo. We'll get to that bit. Now we all know about, you know, the common software design principles like single responsibility, inversion of control, and further up the stack we've got things like MVC, MVVM, and everything like that. We're not going to cover each of those in a lot of detail, but we're certainly going to be using them as part of the framework. And the framework will force you into using these really great patterns. We should never aim to introduce too many new or wild patterns into our software. We should be instead aiming to improve our definitions of the patterns that we're using, and importantly, improving the usage of those patterns. And so as one little example, and you'll see this throughout the code I'm going to demo, is that you take single responsibility, composition, portable class libraries, and dependency injection, and together they create these tiny little injectable components that you can start using on all your projects, whether you're doing Xamarin or Phone or Windows, or you're working on MVC or Web API. Your developers are starting to pick these little components off the shelf that do these little bits and pieces. And thanks to PCL, and certainly now that Xamarin supports portable class libraries, you start finding code reuse on, you know, you've got this web API over here, and all of a sudden you've got this, you know, this same piece of code running on an Apple phone. It's really cool. You're baking in familiarity, and every time that you use one of these components, you're improving test coverage. You know, there's any fixes happen to everything all at once. You're spreading out code familiarity, you know, across all your products, and you're certainly reducing complexity. And so, my point is that alone, whilst these patterns are really great ideas, together that they form something that's greater than their parts. So we take all that stuff, and then we apply some rules, and that's what becomes a framework. We enforce our wants and needs into that framework, and we do it in a way that's really, really easy to follow. And so, for the rest of the talk, we're going to be sitting in code, looking at ways we've achieved those framework goals across a few of our products' areas. And so the first part that I'm going to deal with is MVVM, and then later I'm actually going to talk about, given time, thank you very much, I'm going to talk about how it actually structure a real project in a real solution. So sometimes watching people do MVVM is like watching someone who's about to put jumper cables on backwards. You're sort of sitting there going, oh God, it's not nice to watch. And there's so many different ways to do it. And certainly there's a lot of different ways that are right. But at the end of the day, MVVM is actually a really super simple pattern, I guess you could call it. And so it is a set of rules and conventions that are meant to make development on a platform where you have view, so display, and code, which are two totally different paradigms. And that's what it's for, is to help that work. And so the main goal of Xamarin Core, Xcore, my frameworks, is to make it super simple to navigate around and to add new content into the application. And of course, to ensure that the basic MVVM rules are followed. So in the demo you just saw, it was really easy to do all that stuff that I was just talking about and to achieve that simplicity, but obviously there's quite a bit of stuff going on underneath the hood. And so let's have a look at some of the rules and tech that we've got baked into the framework, and then we'll examine how that actually works inside the framework. So we always use view model first navigation. We never ever from code know about any of the views. In fact, the whole app can run without any views attached. It should, because that makes it testable. We do automatic view selection based on convention. So you got this type of view model, that means we automatically load this type of view. Everything that backs up a view is a view model. You never ever have anything shown in the system that doesn't have a view model behind it. We use a mixture of these two things that are part of Xamarin Forms, called a Xamarin Forms page and a Xamarin Forms view, and it's important to know the distinction. And we use the AutoFact dependency injection container, IRC container, to do basically anything in the whole system where we need to create something, or we need a factory or something like that. And so AutoFact is the absolute core of this system. And of course, we should never violate the MVVM rules. And so I've always thought you never really understand something until you build it from scratch. And so another reason to have built the framework. So let's have a look at how some of those rules pan out in code. All right. Hey. Wish that had done that last time. So what I actually have to do is load up another project that should have already been loaded. Thank you. And what I'm actually going to do now is I've got this other demo, and it's available on GitHub under jackadge/tech presentations. And the code in there is obviously finished. This one I've ripped out bits so I can demonstrate how it works. And so the idea is I'm going to run you through, as I said, how some of those bits and pieces work. So I'm just disconnecting my old Visual Studio to the Xamarin build host. And so what I've actually got in this project is I've already put in the views and the view models. And so I've got a home view and everything that we need to navigate to and show on the screen. It's got a home view model attached to it. There's some data binding going on. We've seen how simple it is to add views and view models, so I'm not going to touch on it. I've already added them in to speed things up. and there's a home view model sitting there. But if we run the app at the moment, it's pretty much the boot up process is still based on the Xamarin template code. So let's just see that running. And the idea is that we're going to change the boot process, we're going to load up some view models, and we're going to show them on the screen using views, all part of our automated process. Okay, so Xamarin apps, iOS apps, boot from this thing called the App Delegate. And at the moment, at the top bit, we've got the template code that comes when you go file a new project, and below it, we're going to start altering things around to get into this little mini framework. So I should mention all the code in this, all the code that that we made is available in this project. There's no other NuGet packages that we rely on other than publicly available ones made by other people that are used. So everything we're doing here is in this project. And so the first line there is actually initiating all the AutoFac stuff. We're going to get back to that in a minute. My terminology for all the AutoFac stuff is I call it glue. So that's the project glue, it's setting up AutoFac, and we'll have a look at that in a minute. The first thing I'm actually doing though is I'm resolving a class using AutoFac that's going to be our IIS view host. And in this particular circumstance, that view host is what boots everything up, gets the initial view models loaded and figures out how to glue everything together and show it on the screen. And so I'm actually telling the host, hey, can you please boot me a home view model? So let's have a look at how that works. Okay. And so, keeping in mind that everything in the whole system is completely built around dependency injection using AutoFac. So you can see already there's some interfaces coming into the class here, and it's getting things set up. Don't really need to worry about what they're doing, but essentially just know that is actually making those objects become alive. And so we called that init method, and we're asking for the home view model because that's the first view model that needs to load. So the first thing we need to do is we need to create some sort of factory to create those view models. And so what better than a view model factory? So let's go and have a look in that. And pretty much, let me just load up further things. Pretty much the view model factory basically just goes back into AutoFac and resolves anything that I tell it to. And so what I'm actually going to do here is I'm going to load up, wrong code, sorry, here we go. Still recovering from the old reboot there. Okay, so basically any time something is resolved by AutoFac, you can ask for an iLifetime scope. And that is itself a container that you can resolve things against. So I'm using that container to go and resolve the generic type that's been passed in, which in this case is going to be one of those home view models. The way the scope gets it is automatic. Remember I mentioned that we've got that project glue, and in there is this auto registrations module. Now a module in AutoFac is just a nice way to take a bunch of AutoFac configuration and put it away so that way nothing else has to worry about it. I've already actually done a lot of the AutoFac configuration, and if you don't understand it too well, you can go through and download the code and you can actually figure out for yourself how that works. But in this case, what I'm actually doing is I'm saying whenever a developer adds a new view or a view model to my project, I don't want them to have to go and muck around with AutoFac, so they actually never have to touch this again. And that's because I'm doing this special register assembly types that AutoFac brings, and I can say go and find anything in that project that ends in view and register it. And anything that ends in view model, and register that as well. And I've also got this property auto wired on the end of the view model one, and that's so it can do property injection, because view model is a base class, and whenever I inherit from it, if I'm doing constructor injection, I don't want to have to pass through all those constructor injection properties down into the base class. So I go straight for the base property injection, and that way I don't have to worry about it when I'm overriding the view model base class. And so that's what that's for. So back into the view model factory, we go to AutoFac and say, get me that view model. And it constructs it, it populates everything for me. Regardless of what it does inside there, I don't even know how it works, but that's the extent of code to actually go and create one of those objects. It's a very small set of code. So let's go back into the view host. The next thing that it does is once it's constructed one of those view models, it sends it off to the Navigation Manager. And this is a really simple class, Navigation Manager. And basically, it's got a backstack and it's got a current content object. When I say navigate to something, it pops it into the backstack. So that way I can navigate backwards through the stack. And it sets the current object that I'm viewing on the screen or would like to view on the screen to be the current content object. So that way I can go to the navigation service and always know what view model is currently being used. It doesn't send any messages or anything like that when it's got a new view model. It's up to other things to monitor it. And this is a big thing. This is, it forms, I guess, one of the crux or one of my rules is that make these things as simple as possible. Don't have them talking and sending messages and firing events and everything like that. Have things monitor it rather than it tell things. And so the thing that monitors this, keeping in mind that we're making components as small as possible, the thing that monitors this is called the View Manager. And what the View Manager does is its job is to go and figure out what the Navigation Manager is trying to show, find that thing, and send it off to the View Shower. And so this is where things, I guess, get a little bit interesting. It's got to attempt to resolve the view based on the view model that was navigated to in the Navigation Manager, keeping in mind that we're always navigating to view models. So we've got this view resolver that's actually quite important piece in this application, and it's used all around the code. If you're going to pinch one bit out of this framework, it would probably be this. And so what it does is I go resolve, and I attempt to resolve a piece of content. It's going to be a view model, most likely. And remember the convention where if you've got a view model, say it's called home view model, it's going to automatically try and look for home view that's paired with it. And so what it does is it gets the type name and it replaces it just using a straight up string replace and then uses that type name to try and to say to AutoFac, hey, can you please resolve that? So I'm just going to grab a little bit of code here to paste in and let's go through that. So again, we're seeing a simple AutoFac scope resolution, except this time the type that's being passed in will be the view. So we can resolve the view model, and then we resolve the view based on the view model type. And so with AutoFac we can say, is it registered? If not, then we might go down a different code path and try some other conventions, or we might, you know, do something else. But essentially, usually it will get into here and it will be able to resolve the scope much the same way as it did with the view model itself. And so let's just slow down for a second and whack a breakpoint in there and have a look at that in motion. It all happens pretty quick. Hopefully it builds, beautiful. Hopefully the PC doesn't crash. Sorry, Mac. And, oh yep, of course. So what we're doing is we've got this current content object, and it's probably a bit small for you guys to see down the back there, but essentially it is a home view model. And the view resolver has returned a home view. And it is of type Xamarin Forms Page. So we've all of a sudden got something that we can show on the screen. And the next step is then to go into the view shower, highly technical name there. Up to this point, we've actually been operating in portable class library land. So this is fully cross-platform compatible. This is the first stage that we actually get into, I guess, iOS Xamarin native code. Obviously, showing things on an iPhone is going to be a lot different than the way you show things on an Android, but you can use the same classes. We can use the Xamarin Forms page to show. It's just that the things that go around it or the OS paradigms that you might be using on the different devices change. So this is where we get the, device-specific code. And so we've got the page. We've got a view model attached to the page. What we need to do is a couple of things. Firstly, we need to initiate the screen, which is something that the Xamarin template code was doing for us. So we're actually going to do that ourselves now in here. And then we're going to show a view. And it's actually remarkably simple once you break it down. So first of all, I'm going to do the initialization. Now with the Xamarin Forms code before, it was initializing a window and it was just actually showing the home view, like they had a home forms view. It was showing that on the screen, whereas we actually want to wrap it up this time in a navigation view, because navigation views you can do a whole heap of cool stuff with. You can actually push in any Xamarin Forms page and it'll automatically do the little slide animation and put the little back thing up the top and everything like that. So at this point, we create one of those and then we can push any page into it and we can also pop pages back out to go backwards navigation. And so pretty much, that's dangerous. Pretty much we've got this show view, which is what the view resolver was talking to before. And if it hasn't been initiated before, then it goes through the startup routine and initializes it. Otherwise, it just does this really basic little thing here, saying if it's a forward navigation, then push the page into the navigation object. And if it's a backward navigation, then pop it back out. It really is that simple. Perhaps the most complex part to all of this is that AutoFac configuration. And once you wrap your head around that, or if you've done it, you've done AutoFac on other types of software development projects, for example, MVC or anything else, then it's exactly the same on here. And pretty much, you know, the good thing is, I guess, is that all the code that I've been using here today, as I said, is available and you can go and pull it apart and see how it works. But certainly, the ability to automatically resolve pages based on view models and keeping that convention intact is a very important concept. So we'll just wait for that to boot up, or maybe I've hit a breakpoint. There we go. Cool. And so basically, that's exactly what we've just done just then. I've made it so then when I click go next, it pushes into that navigation thing and I can go back and forward as much as I like. And realistically, there's only probably about 20 lines of code that are making all that happen. There's probably a million lines of code in AutoFac, but we don't have to worry about that. Okay, the second, I guess, concept I want to run through is applying that same idea except for lists. So remember I said that anything that you show in the system should be based on a view model and it should automatically attempt to find a view. That goes for list items as well. So instead of actually creating list items that have the data in it, we should be putting view models in those lists and having the list try and figure out how to show that view model. So what I've actually got here is I've already created a list that's going to show a list of names. And the idea is that it's got a list of people that I've got a little for each there that goes through and just populates people with sample data. But instead of putting a person into the list and then showing the list based on that person, I actually wrap it up in a list item view model. And so based on the convention that we've been talking about, the list item view model is just a really simple view model that contains that person. But of course, it's got a list item view paired with it, as you might expect, based on the convention. And so the list item view is a really, it's just a simple, this is the other type of Xamarin Forms thing where we do it in code instead of in Xamarin Forms XAML. And all it does is it creates some bindings on the screen for, the person to show. But the important thing is that this one's actually a content view, not a content page. Content views can be inserted into other things, whereas pages must be the outer thing. But in order to show that, we probably need, a special list box. And so what I want to demonstrate now is how simple it is to turn a list box into something that dynamically generates code. And this is actually similar concepts will work on, say, Windows 8, Windows Phone, JavaScript, anything really where you've got views paired up. So in the actual names view there, I'm using code to create this new type of list box called an X list view. And it's based on regular list view. So what I need to do first is tell it how to dynamically generate views based on the items that are in its collection. So first up, I'm going to just grab another bit of code here and I'm going to pop into it. In its constructor, basically what it's doing here is it's saying my item template is going to be this dynamic content cell, and dynamic content cell is where all the fun happens, but that is the XListView code finished. It's really simple. Dynamic content cell's got a little bit more going on, but not as much as you might think. Okay, that's it there. All right. Okay, so that's the entire code for doing dynamic content resolution for a list view item. Now, basically, what it's doing is it's saying when the cell gets populated and it says when my binding context changed, which is actually going to be the list view, list item view model, when it changes, and it's the list box that's doing that, so there's not our code, basically it goes, all right, get out the current view model that's in my binding context, which has been applied by the list box. Once again, we're using AutoFact to go and resolve the iView resolver, which is the thing that we used before to get the page views out based on the view model. So we're using the same object again. And then we just ask it to resolve it, much like we did before. So it's exactly the same code, repeating the same stuff. Except this time, because we're in a view cell, which is the type of cell that you need to put in list boxes, we can actually take that view and we can apply it to the view property of this current object. And so whenever this particular view cell sitting on the screen has its view model changed, it will automatically update the way it looks on the screen immediately. So you can do some really great dynamic stuff with that. So let's just set a breakpoint here and let's have a look at that working. And so this time, it's up to the list box to do the trickery. Here we go. So we've got this names page. So we've hit the resolver and it's resolved it out. The resolver's then given us back a list item view based on the list item view model, exactly the same concept as before, and then we populate that view into the page down the bottom there. And then if we cruise across here, we can see those people. Back in names view, I've got a little example here of how you actually get that value back out. So for those of you following at home, if you just tap there, it'll actually pop in there and I can actually get the currently selected item, and it's one of those view models. And if I drill into it, I can actually see the person that was clicked. So that's I guess the full round trip from showing on a list to getting it clicked to coming back and doing something with that value. So that is a really quick crash course in how you would build MVVM stuff from scratch. And with that knowledge, you can either do it yourself in your own framework, or you can adapt another framework, or you can use another framework to do it. But essentially, just that knowledge in itself should be enough to, I guess, set you on the right path to, you know, creating these things for yourself, or at least knowing what you're doing when you're doing these frameworks. So just to recap on that, everything resolves around AutoFac. It doesn't matter what you're doing, whether it's view selection, whether it's navigating around a system, or whether it's actually getting some services or communicating with a web server, those objects all come from AutoFac. Never directly create them. There are two basic view types in Xamarin Forms. One of them's a page and one of them's view. So keep that in mind, because it took me a little while to get my head around the fact that those were quite different. And use view models coupled with AutoView resolution in as many places as you can. Even if you're just doing little subsections on pages, you should do it there as well. Never create them directly. It's just going to save you so much time down the track. So I do have a little bit of time left over, which is nice. Basically, what I want to do now is I want to show you, I guess, how I'd set up a project using AutoFac and other bits and pieces, and other little, I guess, little tips or important things that have found their way into our code and now form the basis of how we build our projects. And so I find that with real-world projects, it's really hard to know how to structure that project or how to set it up or where to put, you know, this and that. It's really hard to, I guess, find that information on the internet, and there's so many different ways to do it. So I'm just going to show you our way. You can take bits out of it if you like, or you don't have to, but I think it's pretty cool. And so often demos that you see are filled with, you know, this is demo code only. I wouldn't really actually do this if it was in the real world. So I'm going to flip it around. I'm going to say this is actually how I do stuff in the real world. Again, code's available. there at the tech presentations URL if you want to download it and run through it as well later on. And so with that in mind, let's do this Hellride demo where I'm going to run you through very quickly how to set up a project in Xamarin. Cool. All right, so we're still in the same Xamarin with a view project there. Up the top of that project, I've got these two solution folders. One of them is MiniCore, and what it is, I've actually extracted out a subset of the Xamarin Core library to make it easier to study. And so potentially you could actually use this MiniCore as a core framework in itself. What I've also got is a mini model. And so this is, I guess, an example of how I would set up a model, which includes things like going up to the web server, business logic, entities, and things like that in a real project that I'd be using. And so I've got those two mini examples just sitting there ready for you. And just for reference, the shared framework area is all that view selection stuff. I've put all that in one spot as well, so you can follow it through nice and easily on your own machines. What I'm going to do here is I've created in here somewhere, in the portable app, which is where all the views go, and that's shared between all the different platforms, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows 8, Mac Desktop, whatever you want to do. And I've got this clowns view. Don't ask me why I call it clowns, it was just the first thing that popped into my head when I made it. And basically, clowns view is a little bit like the other list view that I just demonstrated. It's got a list view that pops up on the screen, except this time it shows a list of clowns. However, this time, instead of creating the clowns just straight into the view model, I'm going off into the model to go and grab all that information back. So the first port of call for any time a view model wants a piece of information is they go off to a service to get it. And the service is a piece of code that runs on the client side in the phone that then provides services to the view model. So it knows how to go and get a piece of data from over here. It knows how to hit the cache. It knows how to do this stuff. View models only ever talk to these services in my code. And so I've got this service in here that's called getClowns. And basically, getClowns returns, as you might expect, a list of clowns, but it has to go off and go to further areas to go and get that list of clowns. So what it's doing is it's going off to the clowns repo. Now, in a real app, I knew I wasn't going to say this, it would actually be going up to the internet to go and get that. But in this case, we sort of stop it there because I just wanted to keep the demo on my machine rather than having to go up to some web server somewhere. Clown repo, there it is. And so what it is though, what's important to note here is that as much as possible, we try and base all repos or all things of the same type on a common base class. And in this case, it's a basic repo. And the repo has things like get, update, delete, just pretty much basic CRUD operations. And it's generically typed, so that way it knows whenever I say get, it'll automatically deserialize the object and return it as a clown. And pretty much in here is also where we might type our API address or whatever it is in there. As I said, in this case though, it really is only just getting it from this thing. This demo doesn't go into how to making a network call or anything like that, which is pretty much basic stuff you can look up in the documentation. And so what I have implemented though is two things. I've got get, which gets a single clown, and I've also got get list, which returns a list of clowns. You'll notice though that there is actually this await, and it delays by 4 seconds, and that's, I guess, to simulate some sort of network call that takes 4 seconds to return. And then I just return the clowns from that. And the 4 seconds, it's in there for a reason. I'll show you why soon. So back into the clown service. What it's actually doing though, and this is one of the most important concepts that sort of came to me, I guess, late in the game when I was building Project Tripod. And so often over time, I see people trying to put things like, you know, SQL databases and SQLite and all sorts of relational stuff into their phone apps when they're doing offline syncing and stuff. And it's like taking app calls on APIs and then rebuilding a relational database out of it. And I realized after a while, why do that? Why not just treat the data that comes out of an API call as the denormalized data that it is and just store it straight into some sort of entity cache? And so when I need to go and get that data again, it's just under that same call. Rather than storing it in some database, it's under the original call that I made. So in this case, cache, we made a thing called this entity cache, and it's got some pretty cool stuff in it, and there's a couple of things you might be interested in there. So the idea is, with the entity cache, I can say, entity cache, can you please go and get me my clowns list, which is the key. And you know, that could be clown favorites, or featured clowns, or whatever it is in your your product. But I also tell it how to go and get those clowns from the server. So I'm actually passing in the clown repo get list. And so the entity cache goes, do I have some clowns there that are under 1 minute old or 1 day old or whatever you set that to? If not, it goes up to the server and gets fresh ones. If it can't get them, there's options there to say, yes, I can use expired list of clowns or not. If the clowns are out of date, I don't want to use them. The entity cache handles all that stuff. So I just want to very quickly go in there and have a bit of a look through the entity cache and what it's got in there. So it's got a couple of really, really cool things. And one of them I want to show you is, anyone who's done a fair bit of development will know how hard it is to do signaling across threads to ensure that two pieces of code don't run at once. There's a few ways to do it. You can use semaphores or manual reset events and things like that. What I discovered, and it was actually Scott Hanselman's blog that I read it on, is a way to do really simple locking based on tasks. So I can actually await a locker, as you see here. I can actually await a locker, and you know, it can stack five things waiting, and only the thing that's currently in there will work, and then the next one will work, and then the next one will work. And the locker is automatically released because it's in this using statement. So the locker is released by the dispose code on the actual asynchronous locker. And so that piece of code is available in this, credited to Scott Hanselman and also another guy on his blog, Stephen Tubbs. But basically, what I've also done is I've added another piece of code to it so we can do named locks, because unfortunately with an async lock, if you've got locks running all around your project, they'll all lock each other and you can actually get in lock loops and freeze your app. So we added a name lock whereby we can lock based on the file name that we're trying to access, or in this case, the name of the cache key. So remember how I said that the cache can go up and get clowns from the server? Well, I async lock the first one, so if the clowns aren't in the cache, only the first one actually goes up to the server to get them. And if I've got another two requests for that same piece of data, it waits until the clowns have come down, it writes those clowns to the cache, and then it lets through the next caller to actually run that piece of code, and of course the clowns are in the cache. So that's actually a really difficult thing to achieve in any sort of code that you're writing, is making sure that only one thing calls the server and the rest all just use that cache data. And so that's actually done by this little piece of code here. I think that the async lock stuff, which you can see on that blog link, it's available in the code. I put the link in the code there. Is free to use. So let's go back into the get clowns here. And so I mentioned that you can have cache expiry and all sorts of stuff. Anyway, really simple way to go and get some data from the server and then store it locally and then use it later. We use it for everything now. We're not using any SQL or anything like that. SQL databases and things like that are really, really difficult to manage. You've got to update, obviously you've got to update tables and everything like that. Whereas with this, you don't have to worry about any of that, because if you update your app, just blow away the caches. It's pretty cool. It's saved us a lot of time over the last sort of 6 months or whatever I've been using it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put two breakpoints in. And I'm going to run the project so we can see the clowns coming down. I should have mentioned that the local storage stuff that we've implemented as well uses that same async locker, so you can't accidentally read and write files at the same time and everything as well. So the clowns page here on the first hit, it's hit the clowns, it's going to go off to the service, and then you go, you wait, 3, 4, go. It's come back from the service. The next time it runs, or if we run it again in under a minute, it'll be instantaneous coming out of that cache. So those ones have actually come out of the cache. To my end developer, and this comes back to the story about making things as simple as possible, they just get clowns. All that stuff that you've set up down there, they don't need to worry about that. You produce a set of calls to the server in these services, you provide them, anyone can use those services. For you to set it up as the person that's built that API call or whatever is trivial because you understand that call. Using these patterns, you can figure it up and then you just provide it, check it in, and then they can start consuming it and building things out into the views for you. And so there's a lot of complexity going on under there, but it's completely hidden. Unless you want to go in and find the complexity. And so I'll just finish off with just one more little demo back in Xamarin Core. On the home screen in the Xamarin Core project, there's a tab view and it's got two items down the bottom. What I'm going to do is I'm going to very quickly add another item to that tab just to, I guess, go back to where we started with the knowledge of that you've learnt throughout this lesson, try and follow along what you think is happening as I add this tab. So I've got this tabs folder here and it's got first, second. I'm going to add third. I'm going to delete third from a previous demo, run first. Okay, third. And I'll call this later Xamarin Forms page called. Actually, I won't do that. I'm going to add third view. And as we know, third view. Spell that right. Third view model, and I'll just rename it as I go in there. Okay. So what I actually want to do here is with third view model, sorry, with the third view, I'm just going to copy in some content there rather than type it out on screen. And so the third view is going to be a content page. Let me just, yeah, content view, sorry. So this is one of those other view types, remember the page types, because the actual tab view is a page itself and it takes sub content. So as we've learned, that can't be a page itself. It has to be one of these content views. There, okay, cool. All right. And so what I'm doing basically is I'm just adding in some controls. There is this extra little part that's part of the framework to actually set the icon. And what that allows us to do is to have these view models that can provide an icon should it want to. So I'm actually just going to set that to faves.png, which is just an icon that's in the system. And basically, once I've got that guy there, I'll go in and set its title, sorry, wrong spot. And I'm going to call this third. Cool. Then, remember before when I was doing the master detail thing, I had to go and tell the master detail page to include this. Same thing with the tabs. I've got to say to the tab view model, everything's a view model, that I want it to include the third view here, please. Third view model. And that's it. The tab's been added. Take this code and use it to build your apps much quicker. It won't compile any quicker though, turns out. Oh, it didn't even run. So, just quickly show you third view. So I'll just quickly just show you this working and then we'll go and do a recap. I think what happened there is it needed to do a clean build. There it is there. So the third item's just sitting there and it's got the third content linked up to it. Pretty straightforward. It's a fairly in-depth concept that was performed in a really, really straightforward manner. So just to quickly recap, view models should only ever talk to services. They should never talk to another level behind that. So if you have things like HTTP status codes or other things that have no place in view model world, you're probably doing it wrong. Try not to use relational databases just because you know, you've always done it. Become comfortable with denormalized data and working with just straight up caches. And so the entity cache in this case is pretty cool and it can also go to the server for you and it can handle all that work without you having to worry about it. And the final thing, and the best thing that I've ever discovered while doing this kind of work is the async locker. It's going to save you so much time if you run into any systems or any scenarios where you need to lock and make sure that only one piece of code can run at once. So that's the talk. Thank you very much, and I apologize for the machine crash, but I think we got through it okay. So if there's any questions, we've got about 4 minutes, or you can come up and see me. So thank you very much.